On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, we're going to bust some myths. There are a lot of myths in the boxing world, and we're here to bust them. Canelo Alvarez has announced his plans. He ain't taking, he's coming back, says Canelo Alvarez. Javonta Davis says he's back. I went to UFC 281. Chris was in Cleveland. We'll talk about all that and more on this edition of Inside Boxing Live. What is up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Inside Boxing Live, a product of John Boy Media. I am Dan Canobio, coming to you from our warehouse in Jersey City. Chris Algieri from sunny Florida. Ronnie Jerez, our super producer, is here as well. And Chris, how are you, my friend? You were in Cleveland. You were on the road. You were calling the fights. The three-piece suit looked tremendous. How's everything going?
Thank you. It was good. It was a good weekend, but I am glad to be back. It touched the 30s in Cleveland. And listen, I don't like anything with a five in front of it. Once it hits 50 degrees, I need to get back to Florida.
I heard it was dicey in Cleveland. Shackle texted me. There was a big brawl. The weigh-in, he said, was a little strange. Like Cleveland, I've covered a fight in Cleveland at the Arnold Classic. It's an interesting place. I heard it did get a little dicey, though. There was some big brawls in the crowd.
Well, I got contact high while I was calling the fight, so there's that. But other than that, I mean, I stayed away. I don't go to weigh-ins because nothing good happens at weigh-ins from a commentator's point of view. There's nothing for me to really learn from those, so I don't even go to them. But I figured that would probably not be the safest place to be.
So that was what was going on in Detroit this past weekend. There were some big fights all across the country. I was at UFC 281. UFC Dan was in the house. MMA Dan was in the house.
Casual MMA fan Dan.
Casual MMA appreciator Dan Canobio. I'm having fun with it, man. You know what? Like, I've always loved MMA. I've called MMA for like 10 years now. That's like something that people don't know. Like, my brother owns runs a promotion out on Long Island called Flex Fight Series. So I've been around MMA. I know I had this bit where I'm a casual fan and it's fun, but UFC 281, I was very lucky to get a suite with my brother and the MMA Island guys. And man, that was a card and a half. Obviously, Izzy Adesanya gets upset. Chandler Poirier gave us a fight for the ages. Frankie Edgar got vaporized. That was sad. It was an awesome experience, man. It was pretty cool to kind of pick up the culture there. And I was just like kind of taking it all in. You know, fans get there super early, which was nice to see. You know, they're in their seats at like 8 p.m. watching the prelims, you know, rooting for, you know, fan favorites, like whether it's Dan Hooker, whether it's Poirier and Chandler. It was an awesome night. I'm full blown in on board for UFC. I can't wait for the next one.
UFC is really smart because they were kept out of New York and kept out of MSG for like two decades. And there was a big backlash against bringing them in. And once they finally got in, they've made it a point that every single card they do at MSG, and it's normally in this fall time, they stack them. They stack them with the best fights, the most popular fighters. Dan Hooker opened the main card. Like, he's actually awesome. Super fun to watch. One of my favorite guys to actually watch. I think he's fantastic, even though he's been on a bit of a slide lately. Poirier and Chandler is a fight that has been in whispering for months now, and awesome that finally happened. And that was a non-miss. That you're not going to have a classic in that fight. The main event was, for people who know, especially if you know who Poirier is, that fight was big. And you look at his record, he's only 6-1. He's fighting Izzy, and Izzy's like one of the most dominant champions we've seen in a long time. You're like, you're not giving him a shot. But anyone who's ever seen him kickbox and actually saw their first fight, you knew that was an awesome, awesome matchup, and there was a potential for an upset. I actually thought that Izzy was going to squeak it out, and he almost did. But Poirier is just, man, he's got that eraser.
Yeah, like, I can break down a fight. You can break down a fight. And what I saw in the first round, at the end of the first round, Izzy had him rocked. And yep. I thought, why didn't he go after him at the beginning of the second? He let Pereira kind of recover. I also know that he was a little skeptical of what was going to come back, because Pereira has those hands. And he came in at like 215. That was a straight up heavy.
I was going to say, and he's fucking huge.
He
like,
is
he's
a
so
big,
big
dude, man. So but all in all, great night. Poirier Chandler was insane. Like, that mixed every part of MMA. Like, they stood and boxed for a round. They got took it to the ground. There was a little bit of everything. So I love that. And, you know, the crowd was really into it. Like you said, like, Dan Hooker seems like he's, like, a fan favorite. That's one thing I really like about the culture is, like, people were just rooting for fighters that they know have given them good nights in the past. So, like,
Dan's lost, like, four of his last five. People still love him.
And he's from what? Australia? So far from New York. Doesn't have a fan base in New York, but he has a he has given fans great nights in the past, and the fans were appreciative of that. So they're pulling for him in that fight. His opponent, like, didn't even want to engage. He was, like, laying on the mat the whole time. It was, like, almost like a DQ. All in all, great night at the fights. A fight's a fight. Like, there's a cage. There's a ring. I get hyped for it. And I'm going to be covering or following along. I tweeted out things I like about MMA and things I don't like, which got people very, very riled up. I like best versus best. I like the rankings in the UFC. Like, you know, like Meatball Molly, who was one of the big, got the biggest pops of the night. You know, she's obviously one of, like, the most popular people or fighters in the UFC. And they put her in there with a very tough opponent. And she got choked out within, like, 3 minutes. It's like, if that was boxing, they would have, you know, not to compare the two, but they would have had her go against, you know, built her up because she's an entity. But I like that. I like the rankings, like consistency, like that losses don't matter. Like I said, fans in the seats for the full card. What I don't like is the fighter pay, obviously. I don't like that they wear uniforms, like Chris. Like, boxers, I feel like any fighter should be able to express themselves. I don't like those Venom uniforms.
Look good, feel good, fight good. That's a big part of being a professional boxer. Going from the amateur ranks where you have to wear a uniform, which I understand, especially if you're going to the Olympic level. But once you're a pro and you have that freedom to dress the way you want and make your personal style your own, that makes a big difference. And for fighters, you need that because essentially we're naked out there in front of millions of people. And if you have any kind of flair that you can make yourself stand out and signify who you are, I think is really important. I mean, I've always worn my family's flags and crests and colors, and that's important to me. You know, I have the Argentinian flag for my mother, I have the Italian flag for my father. You know, if there is something that I want to promote, if there's, you know, someone who passed away, like, those are the kind of things that fighters and boxers like to put on their bodies. And I think that's an important part of the sport. So, yeah, I agree with you that MMA is missing the boat on that one.
I mean, they do let them come walk out the flags. Like, that's a big part of it. Like, the walkouts were kind of tame. Like, I was expecting a little more theatrics. I don't know if MSG really allows for that because it's kind of like a weird entrance at MSG. Like, it's always been like that. Even like the WWE is there, they don't really have like the big elaborate walkout. But these are little nitpicking things. All in all, the fights were really fun. Ronnie, you're kind of an MMA guy, right?
Yeah, actually. I mean, I'm an MMA guy before being a boxing guy.
Okay. All right. Not that this is an MMA pod, but I mean, it was a fun night. Like, it was interesting to kind of just take it all in and, like, pick up. I'm so entrenched in boxing. I'm always going to be boxing my number one sport. And, Chris, I'm sure you're the same way. But it is a fight. And I wanted to kind of just take it all in and figure out, like, the culture. And I'm starting to learn a little bit more about the culture of it. And it's just like the fans appreciate these guys. They appreciate what you fighters, what you guys do. And not that boxing fans don't, but it's just completely different type of culture. But that was my UFC experience, and I'm already looking forward to the next big one. Let's get into some of the news. Let's talk about Janabek. He fought on ESPN. Against Denzel Bentley. The hype train around this guy was immense. I feel like Top Rank and ESPN are trying to, like, copy the Triple G hype train. But not everyone's Triple G, right, Chris? Not everyone can be Gennady Golovkin steamrolling guys. And he got a decision win. It was a decent performance, but the hype that they were giving this guy did not allow him any room for error in a fight where he did perform well, but he just simply did not knock out Bentley, which everyone thought he was going to do. So I'll ask you, Chris, Janabek, where are you standing on him? Overrated, properly rated, bad night at the office? What are we going with here?
Well, coming into the fight, I was as hyped as anyone else for Janabek. I've called a bunch of his fights when he was fighting throughout the pandemic and in the bubble. I mean, and he looked awesome. His ability to read guys and finish guys was awesome. It looked Triple G-esque. You know, he did it differently. Obviously, he's not like a come forward, smash you up kind of guy, but like he did it with a boxing flair to it. Also being a southpaw, but yeah, man, he did not have a good night on Saturday, and I'd like to chalk it up just to that, an off night against an awkward, strong guy. Yeah, there's something to say about that. Both of those guys, Janabek's a herky-jerky, kind of awkward off-rhythm type guy. So is Bentley. Just Bentley is a lot less smooth, and you know he's kind of janky in the way he moves, but you can tell he can punch. He's strong. So it was a tough style. You know, do we just mark it to that? Or is he overhyped? I like to think that he just had an off night, which we are allowed to have. Unfortunately, when you've got a lot of hype behind you, you're not allowed to have those nights. But I think that Janabek does have the goods. He definitely showed some holes. He's not a combination puncher. He's kind of just a 1-2 kind of guy, sets up his shots. And he didn't show the one punch power that he's shown in the past. So again, it could be an off night. It could be that we overhyped him, but only time will tell. But you can't give a guy a grade of his whole career based on one night.
Yeah. I mean, he landed 47% of his power shots. Throws 50 punches around. So he's not Triple G. Triple G's 75-80, which, you know, that I think that's just ESPN top rank and doing their thing and really getting it behind the guy. Middleweight is barren wasteland. There's no one at the weight besides him and Munguia. Munguia is fighting this weekend against another no-name guy, a no-hoper. So
Correa, who Janabek iced, put him away through the bottom rope. So what a stupid fight that is. But anyway.
Yeah, that's just Munguia's whole career. You can spend an entire show trying to figure out what the hell is going on behind Munguia's career. But that's a fight that I would like to see, is Janabek versus Munguia. But yeah, I would say, like, you know, he was putting the jab out there. He was putting it together for the first five rounds. And then that's when Bentley from the fifth round out started to counter him and started, he could be hit, Janabek. I think the hype allowed him very small room for error. And I hate to use the word exposed. And later on in the show, we're going to talk about myths and we're going to talk about some of these triggering words in boxing, but not exposed. We just got to see him a little bit more because we hadn't really heard of him until a couple fights ago. And obviously his last fight was a massive highlight reel knockout on ESPN. This one was supposed to be the same. So when he goes 12, you know, you have these questions, and that's fine. And we'll see.
You said he's hittable, but I haven't really seen that much in the past. I thought he came out in this fight in particular. Right. Yeah. He didn't fight like himself, as far as I'm concerned. I've called a bunch of his fights. I called a fight with Rob Brandt where he looked spectacular. You know, he beat Hassan Endam, whose career has been very long. He's taken a lot of damage, but still getting him out of there is important. You know, he's had a couple of highlight reel knockouts recently. People, you know, he had a lot of good performances in a row. And something that I always liked about him is, one, he's ultra confident. He comes out, he's smiling, he's having a good time, he's pushing, pulling in and out. He didn't have that at all in this fight. And from the opening bell, I'm not sure if something happened in camp, I'm not sure if it was something that he felt from Bentley, but he did not come out like his normal confident self. And you could see, you know, like he didn't have that in and out, he didn't have that fluidity, he didn't have that ability to make Bentley miss and reach like he normally has. And that made this fight a fight. I don't think it was a very competitive fight. It was fun to watch. Janabek won fight pretty wide, but he got hit. And that's where people are coming in like, well, I should knock this guy out. And then it became a fight.
Right. They're trying to market him as the boogeyman. But if the boogeyman gets tagged a few times, who knows? Maybe this like opens up him. Other opponents want to step in with him. Like I said, middleweight isn't really great right now. So that was over on ESPN. But you were in, I guess. Final remark here.
I was going to say, sometimes bad performance is good for your career. A lot of my best opportunities came off bad performances. So right. There was light at the end of the tunnel.
There was like that old rumor that Triple G did that, you know, where he stood in the pocket more. And like,
oh, I'm sick. Yeah.
Like Kell Brook kind of tee off on him a little bit for the first time. Yeah. Saw that. And then, you know, that's when Golovkin, he got the fight after that with Canelo. I don't know.
Canelo, yep.
Fighters are, I don't know if Janabek is at that level where he has to do that, but we'll keep an eye on him at 160. You were in Cleveland. The Montana Love debacle. WWE Royal Rumble. You got a little bit of that, you know, dropping sparks or spark, I should say, out of the ring, disqualified. Simple. I'll just ask you, did you think it should have been a disqualification?
I think there was every right for it to be a disqualification. But at the same time, I also think that the fight should have gone on. You know, if that makes sense. I understand where the ref was coming from. And we were talking about this and in hindsight, looking back on it. Initially, I was like, oh, man. I mean, as soon as they announced that a disqualification, I'm like, oh, well, you know, he got disqualified. And then we watched it a couple more times. And I'm like, well, a little arguable. And now in hindsight, going back and watching it, I understand where the ref came from, because I believe once the ref grabbed Montana Love and then Montana gave him that extra forearm over the top. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the ref was like, hey, listen, I touched you. I said break. You didn't respond. She was qualified, which is a, you know, it's a pretty harsh ruling, especially since Spark did a beautiful somersault land on his feet outside the ring. Didn't get hurt. That was impressive. But he, you know, he Spark probably would have fought on no problem. He didn't look like he threw his hands up like, oh, man, come on. But he also won't walk back to the ring. He was like, I can still fight. I would have loved to see that fight keep going because it was actually just brewing and starting to be a really good fight. And I've been saying it all week. Spark had a good chance to win that fight. And I thought he was on his way to winning that fight, probably by knockout.
I like this guy, Spark. He's someone, after watching this fight, I want to see fight again. I like his fighting style, comes forward, very aggressive. I don't know if I can say the same for Montana Love. Obviously, benefited from being on that Jake Paul card last year. And then he kind of like got that deal with Matchroom. And that's good. Great for him. You know, people out there saying they was looking for a way out. He was getting a little touched. He was getting touched up, got dropped, got cut. Fighting in his hometown, looking for, you know, we'll never be able to figure out if he was looking for a way out. But, you know, we've seen it in the past. We've seen it in the past. If a fighter gets, you know, frustrated, they turn to some dirty tactics. You know, Mike Tyson, most notably, biting on ears, trying to break his arm.
He said the way out word. I can't see. That's the quiet quitting of boxing. If you ever say that you can't see,
it's a myth.
The fight's over and you don't want to fight. You can never say that. Even if you can't see, you want to fight, listen, I've had fights where my eyes were shut and I couldn't see, but I still told the doctor, nope, I can see, I'm good. Because I know if you say you can't see, watching boxing as long as I have, anytime a guy in a corner says, I remember watching ESPN days and a guy like, I can't see, fight's over. If you can't see, fight's over.
That's the word.
That's the word. That is the quiet quitting of boxing. If you say you can't see, the fight's going to end, and it has to, because if you can't see, you can't defend yourself. You're in a dangerous position in this sport.
What was it, Gotti way back against Rodriguez, where his eye was shut and they tapped? Ryan, this is a great story. Toro Gotti, mm-hmm. Blood and Guts Warrior, the guy.
Right.
Eyes shut, in trouble, in the corner. The doctor comes over and says, how many fingers am I holding up? His corner guy, tapping his back to let him know how many fingers he's holding up,
dude.
And then he gets back in and wins the fight in a Toro Gotti fashion. Like, that's legendary.
But
like,
he couldn't see the fingers.
Couldn't see the fingers at all. I was shut, just like Chris's was against Provodnikov. Did they had to come over to you at one point and ask for that same thing?
Every round from round six on, they came to the corner because they told me they were going to stop it going into the fifth. And I was like, no, give me one more round. They gave me one more round through the 12. But yeah, so I couldn't see in the corner because every round it would swell. And then we'd be in the corner and we would ice it down and use the end swell to push the blood out of the area of where I'm, you know, can see through the eye. But by the end of the round, it would swell back up because it's just a matter of time while your heart's pumping, you know, that damaged tissue is going to fill up. So toward those later
Google.
Oh yeah. Toward those later rounds, I really couldn't see. And the doctor would come over and they would say, how many fingers am I holding up? And whether I could, because they make you cover your good eye and you got to go through your swollen eye. How many fingers am I holding up? Little trick for the guys at home. Always say two.
Yeah, because they don't go one first, right?
They never go one. The doctors don't ask for one. They go two. Because if you got double vision, maybe then that'll tell them something, but they always go two. So always say two.
Myth busted.
Well, yeah, we got some myths coming up too. But I do want to last week, obviously, a lot of fighter safety now that we're talking about, you know, eye injuries and whatnot. Obviously our last episode was on Eidos Yabosinulli. There are reports out there that he is out of the medically induced coma, and I can confirm those reports. He's out of the coma, making significant progress. Next stop is a rehab facility. So that is good news on Yabosinulli. Don't know if he's ever going to fight again. Not even thinking about that. I don't think his family's thinking about it. I don't think his promoter's thinking about that. But that is good news to see that he's out of the coma and he's on his way I don't know if making a full recovery, but we don't know what his quality of life is going to be from here on out. But significant progress is made on the Eidos Yabosinulli front.
Thank God. That's great. That's great news.
Yeah. So that's that. Obviously, if you haven't saw our last episode, was all about fighter safety. A little disappointed, but not surprised at the lack of conversation around it. Didn't see any of the big guys in the boxing media really talking about it.
Except us.
except us, of course, because we're always going to hit those topics, but no one really, you know, following up, no one really talking about it. You know, I know Lou DiBella, I called him and talked to him and he was upset. But you know, it is what it is. Like, you know, like we said last show, like not everyone wants to talk about it because they just don't know how to, or they just want to sweep it under the rug, but we'll keep you updated on that as we get more information. What else is going on in the boxing world before we get to our myth busting? Canelo Alvarez, Chris, says he'll be back in May. I am not taking a full year off. Coming back in May, coming off of hand surgery. He says, I want a tune-up in May, and then I want Bivol in September at 175. This is what I want for my career. And what we've known from Canelo Alvarez is when he has a plan, he goes through with it. And as we know with Canelo Alvarez as well, is when he has a plan, everyone else gets in line. Whether you're a 160-pounder, 168, 175, the other promoters trying to figure out what they want to do on that date, there is so much ramifications just from this guy's plans. So first off, let's think about who he could fight as a quote-unquote tune-up. I would like to see John Ryder. What are your thoughts? Or the Ryder-Parker winner.
Ryder-Parker makes sense. We spoke about this off air. John Ryder's a tough tune-up, though. He's not an easy guy to fight stylistically. You know, the fight would be at 68, which is probably good because Ryder's going to move up. He's a small guy for those weights, but not an easy guy. He's tough. He's solid. He's scrappy. Zach Parker, probably an easier fight for Canelo, although I haven't really seen that much of him. And
Parker's fighting Ryder. So
right. That Ryder fight will be very telling.
Yeah. The winner that comes out of that is probably in the driver's seat.
But those are the level of guys that I would expect for a tune-up for a guy like Canelo, because Canelo tune-ups are usually pretty damn good fighters. But I mean, we'll see. I do not like the Bivol. Bivol Canelo in September, man.
We talked about it a lot.
He needs to leave that alone. He needs to leave that fight alone.
But I mean, this guy's
no. I get it. He's Mexican and he's got pride. He's got cojones. Like I get it. But I don't know, man. That's a tall mountain to climb.
Ryder, say Ryder gets through this. Canelo has talked about wanting to fight in the UK. I think he's still aligned with Matchroom.
Good idea.
There's a fight right there in the UK, Cinco de Mayo, but it's not going to, I mean, that's not something they celebrate in England, but Canelo has talked about.
Yeah, they'll take it on though. It's a boxing weekend. That's a boxing, like, you know, as much as it's a Mexican independence, it's a boxing weekend too, man. And across the world, you know, the English, the British, the UK, yeah, the European fans are awesome. Well, and I believe they will take that on. And
yeah, the
they,
boxing
they make
independence,
us,
I think, is September. I think Mexican Cinco de Mayo is not even really like a holiday for Mexicans. It's kind of like a made up thing where us gringos go out and put a hat on and drink some margaritas.
I believe it's a
and watch fights.
It's a day to commemorate a winning of a war. I don't know, or a battle. Okay. Yeah, but it's like not that. It's not independence.
It's a battle, though. It's a battle in the ring.
Oh yeah, excuse me. I don't know what I was talking about there, but
right. No,
yeah, this is not History Channel, guys.
Right.
Not History.
September
is
the independence.
Well, boxing.
I learned that straight up from boxing, that the September weekend is Mexican Independence Weekend.
Yes.
That's the bigger one.
Yes.
He'll be back for that. That's the big one where he wants to fight Bivol. In May, I would like to see the Parker Ryder winner, because it's still decent fights, not really a tune-up, and you could put it in the UK where he said he's always wanted to fight. You can put it at Wembley and he will easily get, you know, 50,000-70,000 there, because they've never seen the guy fight before. It would be an awesome spectacle. But also,
I think that's a good move, man.
Yeah, that's a good move. We'll see what he does. It's interesting to see what he does, and what he always, his plans are interesting on for all of boxing, like I said, but there are some ramifications. So if he says he's going to fight Bivol has said he really is not interested in it. That could maybe change if he sees the check coming his way for that. So if he says he's going to fight, if Beterbiev is fighting in January against Yard, now this means that Bivol versus Beterbiev might not happen in 2023 if Canelo does fight Bivol in September. So that is kind of a bummer. Don't actually think that fight's going to happen anyway, Bivol, Beterbiev, but that's just kind of the fallout from Canelo. You know, it's kind of weird. Like, a small part of me was kind of hoping that Canelo wouldn't fight until September, because, like, things will happen in the sport. Like, plant Benavidez is happening because they didn't know if Canelo was definitely coming back or not, or like we'll see who someone else can get that date in May, or other fights could shake out. Like, I obviously love watching Canelo fight, but like maybe if he sat out like just for one of those slots, so many other things would happen in the sport that Canelo kind of prevents just from being such a big star. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's Canelo. He's so big. He has his own gravitational pull. So whatever he does or doesn't do affects the whole rest of the orbit of boxing, because everyone is trying to get that fight. You know, when you are the golden ticket, the way Canelo is, he's the golden boy and the golden ticket at the same time, which generally is how it always goes, right? You had Sugar Ray Leonard. Everybody wanted to fight him. You didn't really want to fight him because he was a killer, but that's where you get paid the most. Same thing with Oscar De La Hoya. When he was in his heyday and he was the golden boy, everybody wanted that fight because that was the biggest draw, the biggest money that you could make. And Canelo has stepped into that position now, and everything moves around him. Like you said, the entire sport moves around him, and for good reason. He it's all about the numbers. It's all about the butts and seats, and that guy pulls.
Yeah. Last headline, Gervonta Davis says he's coming back in January. He didn't delete this tweet. He's known for deleting his tweets right after he sends them. January in D.C. Ryan Garcia and Gervonta Davis are not fighting in D.C. So that right there is a little.
Yeah. No doubt.
We can go to it. That's kind of cool. It's on the East Coast. I would definitely go to that.
Amtrak.
Amtrak. Maybe we hop on the Amtrak. We go watch Gervonta Davis versus who knows who, because that is a big time storyline boxing, is his resume and who's he going to fight. There's a lot of names out there. Honestly, don't really want to get into too much Gervonta Davis right now, because we need to talk about our sponsor on this show. It is a fun one this week. It is Match 5 Trivia Game. Do great minds think alike? We're going to find out right here. We're actually going to play a little Match 5 right now. Match 5 Trivia Game is a match your game. Oh, not that doesn't make sense. Match answers with family and friends. Over 320 game cards that cover a variety of topics. It's guaranteed fun for all the ages, especially with the holidays coming up, Thanksgiving. You don't like your family, you do like your family. Play some match game trivia. Creates fun discussions, friendly disagreements, fist fights, who knows? It's perfect for the holidays, like I said, vacations, or anytime you're ready to have some fun. So we're going to play some match game trivia right now, and I have the perfect card that I pulled out here. And it is, name five words or phrases that are synonymous with a fight. Got that, Chris? Don't say them out loud, though.
Okay.
So
Ronnie is playing as well.
We're going to be playing according to you.
Yes, I'm the host.
All right.
With the most. So I'm going to put my five phrases down that are synonymous with a fight. You guys have to match as many as you can to my fight. There we go.
I see.
The first one. Hey, yeah, yeah. You looking at my phone now?
I have one word that I know you're not going to put in there.
What? It's got to be some Spanish word?
No, it's not.
There we go. Good. Man. I got three. I need two more. Just remind you of your adjunct professor job right here. We're doing a pop quiz.
I just gave my students a pop quiz last week. They weren't very happy about it.
Oh no, you're one of those professors?
Yeah.
Oh.
There we go. I got a good one.
Chris, how you doing over there?
I'm good. I got mine.
You got five?
Yeah, how do we do this? What
I'm waiting on my I'm the host. I need one more.
I only have two.
I got six, but you know me, I always like that. I always like that extra one.
Yeah, you're an honorable mention guy. All right, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie?
Give me 10 seconds.
Pencils down?
give me 10 seconds.
You're lucky and I'm not your professor. You'd be losing points already.
Oh, man. Here we go. Here we go. Someone on Twitter just, I put out, who should Canelo fight? And a picture of Chavez Jr. I said,
we didn't mention my boy Demetrius Andrade. That's my dude. No, I know nobody wants to see that fight, but
I just don't think Canelo will do it. I think he's going for
he definitely won't. Yeah. I get it, because it's not gonna sell. But.
Yeah. All right.
Let's do it.
We're good?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Five words or phrases synonymous with a fight. I got Donnybrook.
No.
Nope.
Good old Donnybrook.
That's a really bad start.
All right. No one has that. Tussle.
Good one, but no, I don't have that one.
Oh,
no, I don't have
Scrap?
I got scrapping. Yeah, scrap.
Yeah, scrap. I don't have that.
A brouhaha.
Oh, come on.
Oh, good one.
Good old-fashioned brouhaha. And then I got a war.
So, oh, I was going to say that, but I thought it would be too, like, you know. It's a tough word.
It is a tough word. Dan, a war is going on right now.
No disrespect, but I feel like
one match.
I feel like my list is better than yours.
What's your list?
No, but we're gonna go with Chris first. Chris, what's your list?
I had scrap. I had fisticuffs.
I had fisticuffs.
Nice. Okay. Pugilism.
Whoa.
Went a little old school. Nice.
What is that?
Over here.
Yeah. Throw hands. Like the throw hands.
Okay. It is a phrase that works. Yeah. It's not just a word.
And then there's a phrase that's just, to me, is synonymous with fighting. Let's get ready to rumble.
I also had rumble.
Rumble.
Let's get ready to rumble. You just got sued. You're not allowed to say that.
So, okay, rumble.
Yes.
Rumble, young man, rumble.
Rumble, young man, rumble.
I don't think Ali can sue me.
No.
I matched with Chris better than I matched with you.
Yeah, I don't know who won, but it wasn't me.
You didn't.
I've become a lovable loser here, John Boy. I lose everything. I haven't won. I did beat Jake in Vino yesterday.
And I
on
beat
our
Jolly.
Stream.
Oh, so yeah. We had electric. A great day yesterday.
We had Jam Boxing represented yesterday, Chris, in the Bino. We had a Bino stream at the office.
The John Boy Hot Boys were representing.
Oh, we Banner won. Day.
All right, let me get to, so saves 15% off when you order now by using coupon code JOHNBOY. Order your copy of Match 5 Trivia Game today. This is a very fun game, and especially with the holidays coming up, love Match 5. Some 320 cards, so it's going to take, unless you play for a very long time, you're not going to get any repeats.
Can I get my list?
Oh, shit, you can give your list? Sorry.
We matched a couple, but I had Rumble, I had Bout.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Bout, mm-hmm. I had Squabble.
Okay.
That's the one
you thought I wasn't going to get. Clearly, I did.
Beatdown, and then
Beatdown,
Fisticuffs.
Mm.
Yeah,
Donnybrook.
All right, so you and I had we had two matching.
Yeah,
Ronnie, and then
you matched Dan.
One with Dan. Yeah. So I win.
Chris, you
made the most. I made the most matches.
Okay.
I made the most matches.
Chris, you're the world champ. We get it. 20-0 as a kickboxer. All your belts are back there. I'm a lovable.
This is why they're all up there, guys.
Yeah. He's Chris wins again. Yeah. All right. There we go. Our main portion of the show, myth busting. Boxing has so many myths. And shout out to everyone on Twitter that gave me some phenomenal answers. I had my some. Chris put some in there as well. Basically, just going to talk about some myths. We're either going to bust them or we're going to say that, you know, these are true. There are some great ones, so let's get it started.
You want me to read them out to you?
I kind of have a different list. So
okay.
I will just read some, and Ronnie, feel free to give your take on this, too, because there are some, like, pretty much mainstream type of boxing myths. All right. Mm-hmm. Close rounds go to the champion, which I think is absurd. Like, why are judges scoring fights without an A versus B type of thing? Like, if you're the champion and it's a close round, oh, I'm going to give it to the champ because he's got the belt. That's ridiculous, right, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, you can speak on this better than anybody. You're the objective numbers guy. You're the guy, you know, who's going to be scoring fights. And that's just not how it works. There's no room for any kind of, like, feelings when it comes to scoring. You're supposed to score each round of it as if it's its own contest, regardless of who each fighter is. The problem is that scoring is subjective, and you have preconceived notions going into fights where it's like, this guy's a big puncher and this guy's not, and then so every punch he lands hurts more than that. But, like, you really shouldn't do that. You got to take it in every moment. So having that idea, having it even in your mind as a judge, is going to make your decision not fair.
Yeah, judging is subjective, like you said. They are humans. They hear the crowd. They sometimes don't see the action. I've sat pretty close to judges when I do CompuBox. I look at a monitor when I'm ringside. Crazy as that sounds, because it's better angles. But close rounds go to the champion is one of the most frustrating aspects of boxing. We don't know for sure if that's the case, because we don't hear from the judges. We don't get their rationale ever until they're, you know, retired. And even then we don't hear too much from judges, but close rounds going to the champion is a myth that we have just busted, because it's BS. All right. Next one.
Fallacy.
Another big word. Professional boxers are required to register their hands as the resident professional boxer on this set here. Is this true? Cause I've heard this forever. It's ridiculous.
No, it is not true. Like, you do have a boxing license, and this comes from the idea that you could be sued because your hands are considered weapons. It's not true. You could be civilly sued. If you have, you know, that's a whole different thing. You go to a case, have a civil case where they're like, this guy knows how to fight and used undue force to do extra damage that was completely unnecessary.
Kicked my ass at a bar in front of my girlfriend.
Right. And then, you know, he didn't need to beat me up that bad, or you injure a guy, like, then there's somewhere where that could come into play, being, but that has nothing to do with your hands being registered or licensed.
Here's a way around that, a loophole. Chris, you're a kickboxer. You register your hands, but your feet.
What about my feet?
Registered. And you're going to get yourself into a bar fight and just kicking the shit out of a guy.
Well, listen, I was a damn good wrestler in high school. And if I'm fighting one guy, I'm not punching you. I'm going to kick you, and I'm going to dump you on your head. Oh. Because I'm not hurting my hands on your face.
Did you ever get into a bar room brawl?
Ever? Yeah, a ton.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And is this when you were, like, before you were a kickboxer, or while you were a kickboxer, while you were a boxer?
Mostly while I was kickboxing, but yeah, it's been a while. You know, I'm a 38-year-old man.
Well, I hope not now. You're not getting into fights.
Can't get into street fights. I'm a world champion. I'm not getting into street fights.
But I mean, like, what I mean is, like, fighters, like, I've heard this, like, you've heard this too. This is also, like, another, like, myth out there, like, or, like, an urban legend. Like, when a fighter goes to a bar and, like, the toughest guy at the bar, like, they don't like that they're there. Like, oh, you're not so tough. Like, oh, you think you're, like, I can take you. And then all of a sudden you're fucking fighting at the bar.
Yeah, no, I've had a lot of those situations, but when you know how to fight and you fight all the time, the last thing you want to do when you're out is fight. And I was never like, I'm never like a hot-headed guy. I've gotten into things because of people I'm around, you know, girlfriends, friends, you know, sometimes you just have to fight. That's just reality. But for the most part, if it was just me, I'm just fine either talking you out of it or getting myself out of the situation. It's never worth it. Too many things can go wrong.
Must be annoying too to be the friend that's the fighter. Like, if you guys get into a fight, it's like, oh, Algeria's got to get us out of it and just start.
No, all my friends are tough. I really didn't have that problem. All my friends are really tough guys. My best friend's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and we all wrestled together. Like, we were all pretty tough kids.
I met your brother. Your brother's been in some fights.
Yeah, my brother's a tough guy too. Like, we that was never an issue. It's like, oh, Chris got to come save the day. No. I'm saving the guy that my friend's beating up, basically.
Huntington guys, man, Huntington, Long Island guys, I wouldn't mess with them.
They fight. I tell people that all the time. People are like, oh, you're from Huntington, Long Island, from the suburbs. I'm like, yeah, but this is a fight town. People fight here. There's a lot of bars and a lot of fisticuffs.
Like the Thanksgiving morning, or every other little town is playing football. No, Huntington, they're just fist fighting.
Yeah, they're coming back with bloody noses to eat turkey.
All right, I got another myth here. Mike Tyson is an all-time great heavyweight. Controversial.
Yeah, but he is. He is for a number of reasons, and not just based on his skill. I mean, listen, he's the youngest heavyweight champion of all time.
Yes.
So there's no argument. Yes, he is. He's an extremely, extremely important member of a very small class of heavyweight champions. So, yeah.
Yeah. He's probably the second most famous boxer ever behind Muhammad Ali. He was at the UFC event. He got a massive ovation. He is probably one of the five most famous recognizable faces. Obviously, he spawned a whole generation of fans. But I love Mike. Let me preface this. He's one of my heroes. Like, I interviewed him on this show, and it was a thrill. I don't know if I would place him in the top 10 because he lost every big fight that he was in. Lost to Lennox Lewis, lost to Holyfield, obviously lost to Buster Douglas, not counting those fights towards the end because that was just money grabs for him.
Yeah, he also got knocked out in all of those fights.
Yes.
People forget that.
Conversation that people are always put Tyson in their top five of all time. I'm just like, I mean, what are we looking at? Is it popularity, or if we're going by all-time great status? Like, there's so many other great heavyweights. Like, what would you say is Tyson's best win?
Tough question.
My dad told me that people picked Spinks before that fight.
Yeah, I mean, that was massive. Undefeated, and someone that, you know, I don't know. I think Mike was probably the favorite in the fight, but still, to blow him out in 90 seconds was pretty wild. I watched the Razor Ruddock fights the other night. Those are awesome. Yeah. But Razor Ruddock, very underrated fighter. Excellent fights. And you know, those are big wins.
You went the distance with Tony Tucker. James Bonecrusher Smith was a really tough fight for him. Like, that broke up the streak of knockouts for him. But, you know, this just shows, like, obviously he's so popular and people love him. Like, he's beloved. That's awesome. Yeah. Like, he still resonates with fans even today. But if you, like, really dissect his resume, he isn't that good.
Well, it's like saying Floyd Mayweather's top five best fighters ever lived. He's not. You know, like, I don't care what you say about this. He's not. Because the population of those guys, it's massive. There's an incredible amount of super talented, unbelievable fighters who have lived, you know, throughout the history of boxing. So not having Mike in your top five is totally fine. You can still be one of the greatest heavyweights. Top 20 greatest heavyweights is still one of the greatest heavyweights. Top 20, you know, is a lot.
It's like a 100-year-old sport. So if you're in the top
hundreds of great champions.
Yeah. Here's a fun one. And this one, I like this one. Abstaining from sex before a fight helps you win. Chris Algieri, take it away.
So
known sex doer.
So I can tell you what the science says, and I can tell you what my personal experience is. So scientifically, the idea is that you're preserving your testosterone and you're keeping your testosterone, as my coach Keith Tremblay used to always say.
Well,
how's your testosterone?
And it's freaking amazing.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's something to that. Like, powerlifters will actually take ice and put it on their testicles to increase their testosterone momentarily. So that's something like having more testosterone in your body right before an event matters. So there's that. Now, does it really make that much of a difference in terms of like circulating blood testosterone, free testosterone? Probably not. A lot of it's mental, and anything that gives you an edge, mentally or not, is an edge. So, you know, if you feel like, I used to always feel like that, I took time because I like having sex. It makes me more relaxed and calm. If I abstain from it, I'm a nastier, meaner person. So for me, going into a fight, it's good for me to be a nasty, meaner person. So it was that struggle, that sacrifice, that extra additional training discipline that helped me feel like I was going to go out there and give it my all and have that little bit of nastiness, because, you know, a little meanness can definitely help. A little extra meanness can help.
So with that being said, you did abstain.
I did. Not for a super long period of time, but
how long?
Listen, when you're a young man, I mean, 2 weeks is plenty.
2 weeks?
10 days. 10 days is a lot.
10 days. He's like flipping tables. He's like snapping on, like, buffer.
The Hulk.
Yeah, he's ready to bust.
Six, seven days. I'm slamming this mic against the wall. So 10, I'm like, I'm ready.
So that is a myth. So that is a we just bust.
That's a myth. That myth. Yeah.
There's no science behind it.
Tyson Fury said he was jacking off 3 times a day leading up to his fight with
7.
Yeah. What? 7. Yeah, exactly. So
7.
All right. Jelly
7
legs.
Times a day.
Jelly legs.
He's
Fury
coming in the ring just loose as a goose. I think it's like
the guy's so relaxed.
Rocky thing. Oh, it's like women weaken legs, rock. It's like ridiculous.
No, you know what weakens legs? Hanging out with women. Working your way up to getting laid is what tires those guys out. When you're out and you're listen, you always stay out later than you want to.
Yes. Nothing good happens at 1 a.m.
No, exactly. Once that witching hour hits, it's time to go home and get your rest. And sleep is a big part of not only training and recovery, but your testosterone. So if you're out chasing women late and you get less sleep and you have to go in the gym in the morning, your testosterone is going to drop. Scientifically, that's a fact.
I abstain for recording this podcast. I want to be at my meanest.
For how long?
48 hours.
Just this morning. About 7 hours.
That's my beautiful girlfriend. All right, here we go. That was a fun one. Fighters from the past would beat this generation of fighters.
I disagree. I think they're probably tougher. Maybe to a degree, you know, like harder men, just because of life back then. But the guys now, they're bigger. They know how to cut weight better. Supplementation, training, you know, the other stuff that they can do. Just the progression of the sport and the skill level. I don't know. And plus, you know, scoring is different. The style's different. If you watch those guys fight, there's a lot of moving around each other, throwing punches. You can't do that anymore. I always see that about like Ali. Ali was backpedaling most of his fights. It would be really hard to win rounds fighting like Ali did now in a 12 rounder, the way he fought in a 15 rounder. So I disagree with that.
It's like nostalgia. It's just like almost a nostalgia thing. It's like an era thing. Like our parent, our dads would be like, there's no way that he would beat, you know, Sugar Ray will take down any of these guys. But that's just like, it's your generation. You have pride for your generation. Yeah. But I guarantee, and Chris, you would know this, like the fighters of today, sports medicine wise, nutrition wise, this goes for any sport, are have more access now to like to becoming an elite top athlete than like freaking Babe Ruth smoking a cigarette eating a freaking hot dog, or like Mickey Mantle, who was, his body broke down when he was like 25. Like, same thing with boxing. Like, we, the fighters of today, have so much access to so many game changing things to give them that edge that, you know, that might allow like a fighter of today, like a to one of today's top welterweights, would be able to outclass a Sugar Ray Leonard.
How about nutrition? You know, but back in like in the Joe Louis days, like that was like Depression era boxing. Like, those guys were like starving. Like, Joe was eating steak. You know, Joe was strong. Joe was eating steak, and he was fighting guys who literally haven't eaten for a couple, you know, for a couple days before they fight, because they just, they can't afford food and they're waiting for that payday. Wow. You know, it's just, it's a different, it's a completely different era. Athletes are a different thing now. I always talk to my friend of mine who's into really old school boxing, and we always bring up Ray Mercer. Dude, Ray Mercer would have given all of those old time guys hell. Mercer. He was big. He hit hard. He had great chin. I mean, he would give guys today hell. But he's one of those guys I think crossover would be good in any era.
Okay. Punchers are not born. They're made. Is that a myth?
That's a myth. Yeah. Powers.
Punchers are not born. They're made.
Right. Sorry,
I said that way wrong. Do okay. over. Punchers are born, not made. You're born with power, and you can't develop.
Yes,
it.
You're. You can develop to a degree, but a true puncher is born.
Wow, really? I thought it was gonna be the other way. I thought it could be like Tyson Fury wasn't a puncher. There are a lot of theories for why he is now, but Tyson Fury was not really known as a puncher, and then he hooks back up with Sugar Hill Stewart, and he gains some extra pounds, technique, starts sitting down more and punches, and now he's knocking guys out left and right.
Yeah, but like one punch guys, you either got that or you don't. Like, listen, there are some people who can think they can just crack. They don't look good doing it. They might get tired quick, but some people can just punch. And there's nothing you can do with that. It just is what it is.
Arnie agrees.
I agree. I mean, I can train for my entire life. I'll never be like any of these punchers. I can train like any sport. I won't be LeBron James.
Well, in baseball too, Justin Verlander, he has a rubber arm. Like, he just throws 98, 99 into his 40s. Yeah. Nolan Ryan. Like, some guys are just born with that ability to throw a ball. Some guys are born with that ability. There's a lot of fighters out there that could punch, but they couldn't really do any of the other things. Like, they weren't good at the other aspects, but they had that great equalizer, which is the great elixir in boxing, which is power. So that's interesting. I always thought, like, I thought you would go the other way on that, but
imagine me training my entire life to try to become Mike Tyson.
Tim Bradley and I have spoken about this a bunch of times, and Tim brings it up on air. He's like, I didn't have that power. Paulie Malignaggi is another one I've talked to about. It's like, listen, the guy, he was never going to be a knockout puncher. You know, it's just not the way. Listen, doesn't mean you can't knock a guy out, because I'm the first to say, if you can hit a guy, you can hurt him. If you can hurt him, you can stop him. Okay. That's everybody. Yeah, if you can hit him, you can hurt him. If you hurt him, you can stop him. So anybody can get a stop, anybody can get a knockout. But like a true one punch puncher or knockout guy, you got that or you don't. There's a degree that you can get better based on technique and speed and conditioning, but you have a ceiling.
It's interesting. Yeah, I agree there. You talked me into it. He's the next Mayweather. I hate when they do this. They're doing it today with Shakur Stevenson. They do it with anyone who's slick. They do it with anyone that has good defense. It's just not fair. It's not fair to these young guys. Stop doing it. Stop comparing them. They use our stats. And, you know, we can't stop them, ESPN, from doing that. They try to compare Devin Haney or Shakur, where they are now, numbers-wise, to where Floyd was. Floyd was a completely different fighter at 135 than he was at 147. Stop comparing these young guys to Floyd.
Yeah, no, it's not a fair comparison. But you know what? You know how I look at Floyd? You know what? You know what metric I think is the most important when you're looking at Floyd in his career? The dollar sign. Highest paid athlete ever. That's the real metric of what we should measure Floyd, because, you know, his ability, it's like, you're going to be the next Floyd. It's like, what does that mean? You're going to have the best defense? Is that you're going to, you know, are you going to piss off everybody who watches you? Like, what are you looking to be?
The most money.
Exactly. You know, like the way I look at it, like, listen, I love Floyd. I think Floyd was a fantastic fighter. I love his technique. I think he had a lot of grit. He was way better than a lot of these new age guys like to say that he is. But again, we spoke about it. Is he top five best, one of the best fighters we've ever seen? No. But he's the highest earner that we've ever seen and probably will be for a very long time. And that's awesome. So if you want to be the next Floyd, you better make some valid bills.
According to Daniel Cormier, he's the third best fighter of all time. Amanda.
Stop. Stop. Khabib.
Khabib. And
Ali? I didn't even have Ali.
No, Ali.
Oh, did he? I don't want to think about his list. I don't want to get it.
Ali might have been
yeah,
third.
Shout out to Ariel
Helwani, who's my buddy, who Ariel had him on his show and straight up told him to his face, that is the worst list I've ever seen.
That list gives me a stomachache. Like, just thinking about it. I'm like,
horrible. Ooh. Terrible. And he knows it. What he like. Ariel was busting his balls pretty good. He's like, I know you're a company man. I know you work for ESPN now. That list was ass. It was. next one. This one is near and dear to me. CompuBox stats can tell you who won a fight. This is the biggest myth of them all. And I want
absolutely
to
not.
Debunk. I want to bust this myth right in his face. Pause.
You're the man to do it.
Put that on a shirt.
CompuBox stats. Since day one, since their inception, February 16th, 1985, were meant for, this is my dad would always say, to the point where we'd make fun of him for saying, barometer. It's just a barometer of activity. Judges don't see it, which is another myth fans think. It has zero play in who wins or loses the fight. It is
zero play in scoring.
It doesn't see the score. The judges don't see the stats. The only people that see the stats are the broadcasters and the fans at home. It's a tool mostly for the broadcasters and research, which we send to everyone out there. But I will say this. I think we did a study a while back, and it was like 80% of the time, or even more, if you throw and land more punches than your opponent in a 12-round fight, you're most likely going to win. There are very few times where a guy was down on connects and they either won the fight, maybe because of bad judging, or they landed that shot, you know, out of nowhere, like an Andy Lee shot at the Garden that one time. But I'm debunking this. CompuBox stats do not tell you who won.
You're the best guy to debunk it. So
use your eyes. I mean, yeah. And use everything. That's what I always say. Like, I use the numbers, I use my eyes, and that's the best way to watch a fight, in my opinion. It's just an additional numbers for us. I think they are very useful.
It's a tool. You know, you described it perfectly. It's a tool. It's something that broadcasters use. I think the CompuBox does its best work and is most useful before a fight when you're looking at past performances. You know, as it's live action, like you said, the judges don't see it. It doesn't matter. And even for us as broadcasters, like, we don't look at it every round. We don't have that much time. You know, we're speaking live, even in between rounds, like, we're talking to the truck. We're getting these numbers. We have replays to talk over. There's not a lot of time for us to sit there and analyze any kind of CompuBox information. So it's much better to use pre-fight when you're talking about past performances than anything else.
Shout out to Lee Groves. He puts together the best packages. And
he's kick-ass.
It helps you figure out the database is so big. I mean, 35 years now, more than that, almost closing in on 40 years of every.
Older than you.
It is way. Yeah, it was incepted and it was brought into life 2 years before I was brought into life. But the best thing is that you can kind of figure out how the fight's going to play out, or you should at least have an idea beforehand when it comes to punches thrown, distribution of punches. But yeah, it really doesn't tell you who won. Use your eyes. Ducking. Fighters are scared to fight each other. You can answer this. Were you ever afraid of a fighter?
No, guys, we get paid to fight. We don't fight. We don't get paid. I say this all the time. It is never, it's not that. Fighters are fighters. We fight. Fighters got to fight at the highest level. Nobody, the guys are not scared. Listen, certain matchups are better than others, but I don't have that mentality at all. I mean, the biggest fights pay the most, you know, the toughest fights pay the most, the hardest fights pay the most. So we want to get paid. We want to fight. We want to fight. And also we want to fight tough guys. You know, we all care about our legacy. I don't care who you are. So, yeah, I hate when I hear that from these casuals saying, oh, he's ducking him. It's like, hey, dude, he's not ducking $2 million. You know, I hate it.
I hate the word ducking. I believe that every fighter wants to fight the best. There are exceptions, of course, but I would say 99.8% of the time, the fighter A wants to fight fighter B. The best want to fight the best. They're not scared, or they wouldn't have got into this business to begin with. I think what gets in the way is the promoters, of course. The networks have gotten in the way so many times of some of these big fights. But as for fighters wanting to fight each other, I think they all want to fight each other. They want to prove that they're the best. Why do you sacrifice everything? Give up so much in life. Spend your whole life training, which is some of the hardest stuff out there, just to not want to fight the best and not see where you stand. Like, I think it's ridiculous. So I think that's a big myth that fighters are ducking or fighters are scared.
Fallacy.
Fallacy all the way through. Final two. Open scoring will improve fights. I hate open scoring. Where do you stand on it?
I just made a face that makes that.
Have you ever
terrible.
Fought in a fight that had open scoring?
No. Nope.
I think Texas did it. They did it for a Canelo Lara fight, where after the fourth round, they'll announce out to the audience in the arena what the score is, and then after the eighth round. So
bad idea.
The reason I don't like it is because anything that encourages a fighter taking his foot off the gas, I think should not be allowed in the sport. Right. So if you know you're up, you're going to coast. So you're going to – fighters done this all the time, and it's bitten them in the ass, like Oscar De La Hoya versus Trinidad. He thought he was up, and then he coasted for the final three rounds, lost the fight. Like, if you're – and the other flip side of it, if you're a fighter, you know you're losing. Like, you don't need to, like, be told that you're losing, and you're going to, like, step on the gas pedal. Like, you should – like, I think open scoring is stupid. They're talking about it a lot in MMA, bringing it out. I don't think it will improve fights at all. I don't think it will improve scoring. A lot of these judges don't have any shame or any conscience anyway. I don't think they even tell you who has who up at the time. They just blurt it out. So
listen, scoring needs to be fixed. I don't think open scoring is the way to do it. I don't think that adds anything to it. And like you said, anything that's going to affect the outcome of a fight in that way and change how the way a fighter is going to fight is a bad idea. I coasted one time in a fight. I had the flu going into it. I fought in the garden and I was like, I'm going to fight as hard as I can. I'm going to try and get him out of there early. I'm going to fight as hard as I can. If I don't, then for the second half of the fight's going to be rough because I had a fever. I shouldn't have fought, honestly, but I was like, whatever, I'm fighting. I had a fever the morning of the fight. I felt absolutely horrible. I'm hocking up green stuff. I fought my ass off for six rounds and I won the six rounds and I was pretty much, all right, well, I won the fight.
You won the six. That's ballsy or like risky.
I won the six and I was like, all right, I went forward for six rounds. It was very, very, I put a very strong showing for six rounds. I was like, all right, I won the fight. I mean, I didn't lose all the other rounds. I probably lost two rounds the whole night, but still I fought in a very different style and I was more holding on than anything. I just had no, I've never been so tired of in a fight in my entire life.
So you you equivalent to in people in the real world working a half day.
Well, the problem is I'm still getting punched the other half of the
like
day.
I said, in the weirdest way possible, like some guys, they work a half. I put in my solid 3 hours of work and now I'm just going to pretend I'm working, look like I'm working.
I looked at it and I was like, I put in the hardest work I can. I got enough done. My work day
is done.
Efficiency was good. I got it all done that I need to get done. I'm gonna cruise a little bit because I've literally never been so tired in any fight of my entire life. It was absolutely horrible.
No, it's the closest Chris Algieri's ever come to working a real job. I got 9 to 5. He put in his solid six rounds and got his hand raised.
That was your flu game.
It was my flu game. I've literally never had a job. Like I never had a 9 to 5.
So no, just kidding.
No, he's your adjunct professor, promoter for that one time. What else?
I mean, I've had a lot of jobs, but I've never had like a traditional 9 to 5.
Like a traditional going clock in.
Yeah, I had insurance once. That was cool.
sold insurance once?
No, I had insurance one time. One of my jobs.
Nice. Yeah. We have benefits here, John Boy. Cool. Final myth. And I saved this one for last. Of course, because it's the final one. That boxing is dead. You can't kill the sport, folks. Larry Merchant said it best. Nothing will save it, and nothing will kill it. It's fighting.
Boxing is immortal. It's immortal. Yeah. It's eternal. It's as old as that. That's what, you know, listen, what it does to people, why you want to see it. When there's a fist fight outside, you want to see it. Everyone wants to fight. Everybody likes to watch a fight. It's beautiful violence. We all love it. It's an art. It's something that will never go away. Like you said, listen, 4 months ago, we were saying boxing is having the best year it's had in a long time. Granted, we've shot ourselves in the foot, as boxing tends to do. It gives us self black eyes, but it'll come back. Next year will be another great year.
Ebbs and flows, man.
Ebbs and flows. That's it.
A long time. I've been following the sport for a long time. Good months, bad months. Overall,
that's why you're Danny Optimistic.
Danny MMA, Danny Optimistic. It's been a good year. I'm our year end show. I will illustrate that. But you know, Max Kellerman said this best once. He said, "You go to a New York City street or a city street, and there's four corners." And in one corner, they're playing stickball. The other corner, they're playing flag football. The other corner, they're playing basketball. Fourth corner, there's a fight. Where are all the people going to gravitate towards to? And it's fourth probably corner. The fight. Like, people just, like, love watching fights. And like you said, nothing's going to kill the sport. Nothing's going to help it. It's just, it's going to be here, and there's going to be ebbs and flows. Hopefully, we get the fights that we want to see. Hopefully, there's still an interest in it. And that's it. It's just going to be around forever. And that's that. So that myth, I've been hearing that it's boxing dead since, what, the early 90s? I think it started when Ali retired. And then along comes Sugar Ray Leonard and the Four Kings.
Yeah, the Four Kings. Yeah, okay.
Along comes Mike Tyson.
Jones, Oscar De La Hoya era.
La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao.
Canelo.
Canelo. Now we have this era, all these young guns. Hope they're not really fighting each other, but there's so much talent in the sport right now. And I said this when I was watching at the UFC event with these UFC guys, the MMA guys. I said, if there was a centralized league in boxing right now, the amount of talent, 10, 15 deep in every division, and every week there would be an event like this UFC 281 for boxing. That's how much talent is in the sport. And the sport would rise to the top because there's that much talent.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, you talk to those MMA guys about boxing. They all love boxing. Dana White loves boxing. Like, it's inherent. And you know, it's a version of boxing. This is something I've always got. People are like, well, you are a world champion kickboxer. You went to boxing. Why didn't you go to MMA? And I always said, well, I didn't want to add weapons and dilute my skill set. I wanted to take away weapons and focus so I could be a master of what two weapons I had. So, and that's what boxing is. It's this focused and diluted version, not diluted, focused and
centralized.
Yes. Like, yeah, it's, I mean, focused, centralized. I'm trying to think of the cooking term where you cook something down.
Sauteed, filleted,
fried.
You're the cook, Fighter's Kitchen.
I know. I'm trying to play.
It's been a long show.
We'll get it. We'll get it in the comments. Also, I got to pee really bad, so it's hard to think.
All right, yeah, that's a good place to stop. That was all of our myths. I know you're getting that. That was a fun one. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back next week with our Thanksgiving episode. Chan Cepeda versus Regis Progre. Dillian White's in action next week. We will preview that and much more. Signing off from our beautiful warehouse in Jersey City. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up and stay out of those DMs. See you next week.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.